The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we are tackling, well, a bit of a giant, a book that's often described as one of the most intellectually ambitious works of the 20th century.
We are indeed. We're plunging into Douglas Hofstadter's 1979 classic, Gödel, Escher, Bach, An Eternal Golden Braid. Or GEB, as it's usually called.
GEB, right. And this book, it's monumental. It won the Pulitzer Prize back in 1980, and it really has this reputation, doesn't it? As a book that can genuinely alter how you think about, well, reality itself.
It absolutely does. It's dense, no doubt about it. But it's essentially wrestling with maybe the biggest, oldest question in philosophy and science. Where does consciousness actually come from?
That's the core tension, the real mystery. How can thinking, feeling, self-aware beings, you know, our minds, how can they possibly emerge from just inanimate, non-thinking stuff like the physical mechanics of the brain?
Exactly. That gap between mechanism and meaning.
And what's really striking, I think, is how relevant it still feels today, maybe even more so now.
You think because of AI?
Yeah, exactly. We're living in this age of generative AI, and GEB, it sort of provides this foundational theory, this blueprint almost, for understanding how true human-like artificial intelligence might even be possible.
And the answer, Hofstadter argues, lies in something he calls the strange loop. That's the central concept we need to unpack.
Okay. So this deep dive is kind of our way to get to grips with that fundamental idea, the strange loop.
Let's do it.
Right. So first, let's talk about the mind behind this incredible synthesis. Who is Douglas Richard Hofstadter? And maybe, why was he the person to connect these seemingly totally separate fields, logic, art, music?
Well, Douglas Hofstadter, he was born in 1945, and he has a pretty unusual background. He actually started with a PhD in physics.
Oh, right. His father was a Nobel Prize winner, too, wasn't he, in physics?
That's right. Robert Hofstadter.
Yeah.
So Douglas had that rigorous scientific grounding, but he clearly wasn't going to be boxed in by just physics.
No, definitely not. I mean, his career weaves through cognitive science, AI, even comparative literature. He seems to have this rare combination of deep technical knowledge, you know, math, logic, and this intense passion for culture, for Bach, for Escher, for language itself.
Precisely. And his unique authority, I think, comes from this amazing ability to spot isomorphisms.
Isomorphisms. Okay, fancy word. What does that mean in simple terms?
It just means deep structural similarities or analogies. He doesn't just appreciate the math or the music or the art separately. He looks at them and sees the exact same underlying pattern, the same deep structure running through all of them.
So he's like a master pattern matcher.
You could say that. A master creative synthesizer. He weaves these different threads, Gödel's logic, Escher's art, Bach's music, into this single, interconnected, eternal golden braid.
Okay, so if that braid is the central image, let's nail down the core thesis of GEB. What exactly is this strange loop?
The core idea is that consciousness and intelligence aren't some magical extra ingredient added to matter. They are emergent properties.
Meaning they just sort of arise naturally.
They arise naturally from a specific kind of logical organization, a specific structure, the strange loop. And a strange loop is basically any system involving self-reference where, kind of paradoxically, if you move up or down through the levels of its hierarchy, you unexpectedly find yourself back where you started.
Right, like those Escher drawings where the stairs seem to go up forever but end up back at the bottom.
Exactly like that. And the book's title, Gödel, Escher, Bach, these aren't just random examples he likes. They are the prime exhibits.
Different mediums showing the same loop.
Precisely. The self-referential paradox that Kurt Gödel discovered lurking within mathematical logic. No, Hofstadter argues that's fundamentally the same kind of recursive structure that M.C. Escher depicts visually in his art, and the same kind of complex, layered self-referential structure J.S. Bach mastered in his fugues.
Okay, so if we follow that logic that the mind is basically a very complex, strange loop, what does that imply about the self, you know, the feeling of I?
Well, Hofstadter argues that the self, the I, isn't some fixed, mysterious entity or soul. It's actually an intricate, high-level pattern. It's a self-referential symbol that emerges, that comes into being when an information processing system, like our brain, becomes complex enough to start modeling its own operations.
So the self is a computation, a result of the system looking at itself.
In essence, yes. A beautiful, intricate computation. The book aims to demystify the mind, showing that consciousness has a formal, almost mechanical structure, but one that's also incredibly beautiful and powerful.
All right, let's get into the mechanics then. How does he build this argument? The book has this unusual structure, right? Formal chapters mixed with these dialogues.
Yeah, the dialogues between Achilles and the tortoise are brilliant. They're playful, but they ease you into some really dense concepts. Hofstadter starts pretty concretely, actually, with something called the MU puzzle.
Right, MU puzzle, okay.
It's basically a little game. You have a starting string of letters, like MI, and four very strict, totally arbitrary rules for changing that string into other strings, like swapping I for U or doubling the string after M. The goal is to see if you can make the string MU.
Sounds simple enough, but what's the point?
The point isn't really solving the puzzle, though that turns out to be impossible within the rules. The core lesson is about understanding formal systems. It highlights the crucial difference between working inside the system, just blindly following those arbitrary rules, and stepping outside the system to analyze it, to think about the rules themselves.
Ah, I see. So it's like how a computer works, following instructions without understanding.
Exactly. It shows how meaningless symbols, manipulated by simple, rigid rules, can form the basis of complex processes. It demonstrates that complexity can emerge from pure mechanism, which is fundamental for thinking about AI and minds.
Okay, so from formal rules, he moves towards things that feel less mechanical, like art and music.
Right. He uses Escher and Bach to build our intuition for these abstract ideas like recursion and self-reference. They feel emotional, intuitive, but Hofstadter reveals the rigorous structure underneath. Take Bach, for instance. He focuses on the canon per tonos from the musical offering.
That must be the auditory strange loop you mentioned.
It's an absolutely stunning example. Musically, the piece seems to keep modulating upwards in pitch, rising and rising through different keys. You hear it constantly ascending.
Oh, somehow it gets back to the start.
Exactly. It endlessly rises. Yet through this clever structure, it loops perfectly back to the original key it started in. It's a paradox, a strange loop, presented purely through sound.
Wow. Okay. And Escher then provides the visual counterpart.
Perfectly. You look at something like drawing hands, those two hands, each drawing the other into existence. It's a direct visual of paradoxical self-creation.
Or a waterfall, right? With the water flowing uphill to drive the mill wheel that pumps the water back up. Impossible perpetual motion.
Precisely. These aren't just clever visual tricks for Hofstadter. They're direct, intuitive illustrations of the kind of self-referential loops he's talking about in logic and eventually in the mind.
Okay, so the art and music build the intuition. Which brings us to the real heavy hitter, Kurt Gödel and his mathematical breakthrough.
Yes, this is really the logical core of the book. And the key technique Gödel used was something called Gödel numbering.
Right, Gödel numbering. Can you break that down simply? Because it seems crucial for linking math to the mind.
I'll try. Basically, Gödel had this ingenious idea. He figured out a way to assign a unique, huge number, a Gödel number, to every single symbol used in formal mathematics, like plus variables, every logical operator, and even every complete statement or theorem within the system of arithmetic.
So he turned math into number.
He encoded the language of mathematics within the numbers that mathematics talks about. That's a brilliant trick because it allows the formal system of arithmetic to make statements about itself. The system gains a rudimentary form of self-awareness.
Okay, that's clever. And once the system can talk about itself, that leads to the famous incompleteness theorem. What was the big conclusion?
The stunning conclusion. Gödel managed to construct a specific mathematical statement within his numbered system that essentially said, this statement cannot be proven within this system.
Wait a minute. A statement that says, you can't prove me.
Exactly. And that creates a profound paradox. Think about it. If the mathematical system is consistent, meaning it doesn't contain contradictions, then that statement must be true. Because if it were provable, it would be false, since it claims it's unprovable, creating a contradiction. So it must be true.
Oh, it's true.
But the statement itself says it cannot be proven by the system's own rules. So you have a statement that is demonstrably true, but unprovable within the very system it's part of.
Wow. So standing outside the system, we can see it's true, but the system itself is blind to it.
That's the mind-bending part. It means that for any formal system powerful enough to include basic arithmetic, there will always be true statements that the system itself cannot prove. Truth is a bigger concept than provability within that system.
That really does reveal inherent limits, doesn't it? You can't have a system that's both complete, proves all truths, and consistent, has no contradictions.
It's the ultimate humility check for formal logic. And Hofstadter grabs this key insight, the inescapable incompleteness born from self-reference and runs with it.
So if math kind of breaks itself through self-reference, does life do the same thing? How does this loop play out in biology?
Well, Hofstadter brings in the DNA molecule as really a perfect biological strange loop. Think about how DNA works.
It's a code, the blueprint for building an organism.
Right. It contains the rules, the instructions, but it's also the physical thing that gets copied, that acts upon itself to replicate and to direct the building of the actual organism. It's both the program and the data, the instructions, and the thing being built.
Huh. Code that executes itself to build the machine running the code. That is a neat loop.
A truly elegant isomorphism, as Hofstadter would say. So you see the pattern. Math, art, music, biology. They all seem to contain these self-referential paradoxical loops.
Which means the mind must be the ultimate example, right? This is where he introduces the idea of the tangled hierarchy.
Exactly. The tangled hierarchy is Hofstadter's model for consciousness. Imagine levels of organization. Normally, you think of hierarchies as strict. Level A controls level B controls level C, and never the other way around.
Like a standard company org chart.
Right. But a tangled hierarchy is one where the levels loop back on themselves unexpectedly, where level C somehow ends up influencing level A.
Okay, how does that apply to the brain?
Think of the low-level components, individual neurons firing, simple electrochemical signals. That's the base level. But through immense complexity, these low-level activities give rise to high-level phenomena, thoughts, concepts, beliefs, feelings, and crucially, the integrated concept of I, the self.
So the I is a high-level pattern emerging from the low-level neuron firings.
Yes, but here's the tangle. That high-level symbol, the sense of I, isn't just a passive result. It loops back down and paradoxically influences the very low-level components that created it.
How so? Give me an example.
Well, your conscious decision, your high-level thought, I want to pick up that cup, loops back down to direct the specific firing patterns of neurons that control your arm muscles, the low-level activity.
Ah, I see. The high-level pattern, I, directs the low-level substrate neurons.
Exactly. That self-perception, that high-level symbol representing the system, which then models and influences its own underlying operations, that is the strange loop. Hofstadter argues generates consciousness.
So consciousness isn't a thing. It's this looping process.
It's a coherent, emergent pattern, a dynamic, self-sustaining, self-referential loop. Hofstadter basically demystifies the soul by showing it not as a substance, but as this incredible, intricate pattern of information flow.
That framework really does seem to tie the whole braid together. Gödel, Escher, Bach, biology, mind. Okay, let's zoom out a bit. What are the key messages or themes we can take away from this beyond the technical stuff?
Well, the most fundamental one, I think, is about the strange loop and the self. Realizing that consciousness, your own self, is this kind of loop. It's quite profound. It suggests the self isn't this fixed, immutable thing.
You know, we can change.
It implies that because the self is an emergent pattern, a kind of computation about itself, it's potentially flexible. Mm-hmm. Understanding its structure allows for maybe more conscious self-development, examining and modifying that self-concept. You're not stuck being who you think you are.
I like that. And I also find the theme of emergence of meaning from mechanism really powerful. It kind of dissolves that old mind-body problem, right?
It does. It shows how simple, seemingly meaningless rule-based components, whether they're neurons firing or musical notes in a canon or rules in a formal system, can collectively give rise to incredibly rich, complex meaning and intelligence. There's no need for magic.
Which is useful maybe when looking at other complex systems, like society or markets.
Absolutely. Instead of looking for some hidden essence, look for the simple underlying rules and interactions that allow complexity to emerge. A third big theme is Hofstadter's championing of isomorphism and analogical thinking.
Right, seeing the same pattern in different places.
Exactly. He argues that recognizing these deep structural similarities between vastly different fields, math and music, logic and life, isn't just a neat trick. It's actually central to human intelligence and creativity.
That has huge implications for problem solving, doesn't it? If you're stuck on a problem in, say, business strategy.
You could consciously try to think, what's the underlying structure here? And where have I seen a similar structure solved in a completely different domain, like maybe in biology or computer science? Transferring that solution pattern that's analogical thinking, it can lead to breakthroughs.
Good point. Any other key themes?
One more, perhaps a bit more sobering, but important. The incompleteness constraint, drawing from Gödel.
The idea that any complex system has built-in limits. Essentially, yes. Any sufficiently complex formal system is inherently either incomplete can't prove all its truths, or inconsistent, contains contradictions. The practical takeaway is about humility and perspective. If you find yourself stuck inside a system, whether that's a corporate methodology, a scientific paradigm, or even just a personal belief system,
you might need to step outside it.
True innovation, or even just solving a stubborn problem, often requires the insight and, frankly, the humility to recognize the system's inherent limits and find a perspective that transcends them. You can't always find the answer using only the tools the system itself provides.
That's a really valuable insight for just navigating life, really. Okay, Hofstadter's ideas are complex, but he expresses them so vividly. Let's share a few of those core concepts or quotes that really stick.
Yeah, he has a way with words. One that captures the essence of the strange loop in self is, the self comes into being at the moment it has the power to reflect itself.
Simple but powerful. Consciousness is that act of self-reflection, that recursive capability. A system that can look at itself is a self, in a way. Precisely. And another one, maybe slightly paraphrased, but capturing the feel. In the end, we are locked in mirages that are little miracles of self-reference.
Locked in mirages. That's beautiful. It gets at that idea of the self not being a solid thing, but this coherent, powerful pattern, almost an illusion, but a necessary one for awareness and action. A miracle of computation.
Yeah, a mirage made of logic, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
And maybe one more very dynamic metaphor. We are not nouns, we are verbs.
Ah, I like that one too. Identity isn't a static object. It's an ongoing process. It's the doing, the information flow, the constant transformation. You're not a thing, you're an activity, constantly becoming.
So taking all this on board, these strange loops, emergence, incompleteness, how can we actually apply these ideas in real life?
Well, for people working in AI and tech, the implications seem pretty direct, right?
Definitely. GE strongly suggests that if we want to move beyond current AI, which is powerful but lacks genuine understanding or introspection towards something more like human intelligence, we probably need to build architectures that incorporate this kind of self-referential introspective capability. The strange loop needs to be part of the design.
So AI needs to be able to think about its own thinking, essentially.
That seems to be the implication, moving beyond just pattern matching towards self-modeling.
Okay, what about outside of tech? For creativity, maybe.
I think the Bach analogy is really useful here. Sometimes creators, whether artists, writers, designers, see formal constraints like the rules of a sonnet or the limitations of a medium as, well, limiting.
As obstacles to freedom.
Right. But Hofstadter, through Bach's fugues, shows how embracing rigorous formal constraints can actually enhance complexity and depth. The rules don't just limit, they provide the structure against which profound meaning can emerge. Constraints can actually fuel creativity by focusing it.
That's a great perspective. Embrace the rules to transcend them. And what about just general thinking?
I think the most broadly applicable takeaway is to actively practice isomorphism hunting daily. Just try to cultivate that habit Hofstadter exemplifies. When you face a challenge, pause and ask, what's the deep structure here? Where else have I seen this pattern play out?
So consciously look for analogies across different fields. Bring in insight from biology to a management problem or from music theory to software design.
Exactly. It's about training yourself to see the underlying connections, to think in a more interdisciplinary way. That's where a lot of novel insights come from.
Okay, wrapping things up then. For me, what really stands out from revisiting GEB is just the sheer power of Hofstadter's analogical thinking. The way he weaves everything together is incredible.
It really is.
And the core argument that consciousness isn't some spooky mystery, but an emergent, understandable phenomenon, a complex pattern built from simpler parts that really shifts your perspective on what it means to be human. It makes the mind feel less like a ghost in the machine and more like this incredibly beautiful, self-inventing computation.
Yeah, that's a great summary. For me, the lasting insight is the profound sense of unity Hofstadter reveals. He shows that the deep principles governing mathematical logic, artistic creation, biological life, and cognitive processes aren't just parallel. They seem to be fundamentally the same principles manifesting in different ways.
It's all connected.
It's all connected through these strange loops. The mind, the music, the math, it's all part of this one intricate, eternal golden braid. And it really urges you, the listener, toward a more connected, interdisciplinary view of reality, always looking for those underlying patterns.
A truly mind-expanding journey.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.